We are recording. The red circle has been hit. Omake!
You know, we haven't done an omake in a while.
Yeah, I thought we said that we weren't going to be doing any omakes, at least for a little bit here.
Right. I'm just saying there's no need to yell omake.
There's always a need to yell omake.
Only Cookie likes that joke at this point. But if he likes it,
with that.
I mean, we don't need to take it away from him yet.
If you happen to like that joke, you can write in to podcast@fancyramen.com. It's August 13th, 2017. You're listening to the Fancy Ramen Podcast. I'm Neil.
I'm Cookie.
And I'm Scott.
So, full disclosure, I'm not feeling like 100% today.
What percentage are you feeling? I mean, you have to be between 1 to 99, and you're speaking, so I'm assuming you're above 20%.
Right. Like, what is this, like a logarithmic scale or linear? Because at 20%, is that where I'm dying?
You're probably dying at 20%. I feel like most math nerds would probably say that a logarithmic scale is probably the better way to measure it. But we can do linear if you'd like to.
If it's linear, then I think like 60 or 70% around there is bedridden. Like if your body's only operating at 70% capacity, you're probably really sick. So I'm going to say like 82%.
Wait, and this is with the linear.
Yeah, the linear scale. Because I believe that there's like a much wider state of a failing, dying off body compared to a healthy body.
Yeah, totally agree.
And we also have to argue like if 100% is the same for everyone or if 100% is like the perfect human physical condition, because maybe like the majority of people don't even get close to 100%.
I would want you to base it off of what your 100% is. You have a concept of the best you've ever felt, and so you can use that as a better metric, I think, than just being like, well, the Ubermensch would feel this. Or be at this percentage point.
I missed you guys.
Yeah, welcome back, Cookie. It's been a while.
It has. It is good to have your voice back and not in just like a minute and 30 second clip either. I tried to talk to you, but you just wanted to say the same thing over and over.
We thought it was first an elaborate walkie-talkie labeled a .wav.
Is that what I called it?
No, it's a wave, or whatever. You sent us a wave, but I was trying to illustrate that maybe I somehow didn't know about file types.
But as our editor, hopefully you do.
What the hell are these otherwise you keep sending?
Neil's a savant at audio recording. He doesn't even know what he's doing. He just kind of lets his intuition take him there.
And it sounds good every week.
Yeah, it does. You do a good job, even if you are, you know, completely incapable of understanding what you're doing, Neil. Oh, man. Yeah, it is. It's good to hear Cookie back on the podcast. Neil and I were almost worried for a little bit that you'd be gone for good.
That you might have passed
on. Not because
you
took 2 days off, but because we tried to get contact with you a little earlier. We got nothing. We're like, but what happens if Cookie's gone?
He might have.
What's the protocol? There's no glass to break. There's no extinguisher to grab.
Have you been looking at any notes written in blood and been cursed at all?
No, that one wasn't blood. So no.
Are you seeing visions of long-haired women with bloody faces and broken bones walking around?
Their bone structure seems to be okay, so I don't think their bones are broken. So, no?
But bloody. It's perfectly fine to see bloody women walking around your house, apparently.
No, well, you know. This is life.
So, what have you been up to these past 2 weeks, Cookie?
Well, last week I was happily floating down a river. Just partying with friends, I guess. I don't remember what was going on the week before last. I feel as if I wasn't in Nebraska, though. But that doesn't sound right. I wasn't in Nebraska. Where was I at? I don't know. It's been a long time, guys. I don't know what's been going on. I've just been existing, been doing a lot of woodworking and apparently partying. Oh, now I remember. Nope, lost it. Yep, totally lost it.
Were you perhaps drinking while floating on the river?
I was drinking while floating on the river.
Did you hit your head on something?
No, I did not hit my head on anything. I did hit my foot on a tree, though.
Ow. Bad?
I was wearing a shoe, so it was okay.
Do you, end up accidentally kicking the tree, or, you floated by the tree and your foot hit it as you passed?
That one. It was one of those underwater trees that you didn't know it was there because gross river water is gross. Don't think about it while you're in it.
Which river were you in?
Elkhorn, I think. I think that's what all the white people were saying.
Yeah, if there's a bunch of white people around, it probably is the Elkhorn River.
Yep. It was a good time.
So was the tree, was there just a small branch sticking out of the water, and did you name it, or was it kind of like the Titanic of tree branches?
No, there was no small branch sticking out of the water, so it was a ninja tree.
It was completely submerged.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, my foot hit something. I bet that was a tree, because this water's way too deep to have a rock right there.
And now you're covered with splinters.
But it was a good time. I played some video games while I was away as well.
That's good.
Watched a lot of anime. High School of the Elite? That's actually really good.
I was finally interested in that. I might have to check it out then.
Yeah, it's solid. And also the Fastest Finger one is solid. It's about quiz bowls.
Oh, I did happen to see an advertisement or something for it. Is it actually good in the sense that the content is interesting? Like say a sports anime is good for sports people if the creator actually knows about the sport. Is that the same with this show?
Maybe, but since I don't know anything about the sport of quiz bowls, I'm more interested in it in the way that I'm interested in all sports anime. The way I'm interested in non-sports anime that have a sports anime feel to it.
I get what Cookie's saying, at least.
So it's like watching a Sound Euphonium, which is just about a girl in a high school concert band playing the euphonium. It's really boring and not much happens, but it's really good. At the same time, this is kind of like the same one, same way. It's just about a guy who doesn't have any charisma, who just happens to be a nerd. So he joins a quiz bowl, and he's in it to have the fastest buzzer finger, and there are points in which you know the answer to a question before the question's finished, and you got to figure it out, and then it's weird. Should give it a chance.
Have you picked up any other series?
Yes, I have. So, still watching, Stuck in a Pocket Dimension with my cell phone. It's very, like you said, it's just a nice waste of time right now. Classroom of the Elite. Gamers, I'm finding a lot of fun.
Yeah, so am I. It's kind of, it's cringy in the way that rom-com animes are, but it's kind of amusing at the same time.
It knows itself. And that's all that matters.
Especially when one of the characters is plotting to get his friend into a rom-com situation when he in fact falls into one himself.
Indeed, and it's just quite wonderful.
Yeah, it's pretty lighthearted so far.
I've been keeping up with My Hero Academia and Restaurant to Another World.
Are you completely up to date with it?
No, I'm episode 4 now. So I've got a couple episodes to catch up on.
It certainly seems like this weird twist between fantasy and slice of life. But it's been a joy to watch so far.
Yeah, I wish I would get a little more detailed into the food. It's kind of like watching Food Wars, but without the pervertedness of Food Wars and all the detail. They just have the describing of the food.
Yeah, I'm almost okay with it, though, because unless the show wants to go so far as to actually say what the recipe is, like sweetness and lightning, like I don't know. I don't really think it has to be super detailed. Because like if you're not going far enough to show me how I can actually cook something, then I don't care as much. And it becomes more of like a human element show, like a tale about people's histories or pasts.
But I want it to tell me how to make the food, not just describe how delectable it is and how I'll never be able to make it.
But I mean, Food Wars doesn't really either.
It kind of gives you a little something.
Yeah, but it never,
at least gives you the basic ingredients.
It like tells you what the ingredients are, but never really tells you like a proper ratio at which to use those ingredients.
Yeah,
and it also cuts out a lot of things like, oh, he's spicing this up. Like, wait, what exactly did he just make that broth out of? Or what vegetables did he just put in here? Whereas if you haven't watched it already, Sweetness and Lightning, or Sweetness to Lightning, one of the two, is like super detailed to the extent that there's a recipe usually. I guess I don't know how the anime works, but in the manga, there's always the recipes of what they've made at the end of each chapter, written out step by step. It very, very beneficial to someone that's actually interested in the food aspect of the food manga slash anime.
Well, it is now on my queue. Thank you. And I've kind of been catching up and finishing up animes that I've not finished. So I finished Dororo 2 finally. Apparently I had forgotten to watch the last episode. And I also caught up with One Piece, which I was surprised I did.
So you're on episode 801?
Mm-hmm. Haven't missed a single one. It was like one summer of just dedicating myself to waking up to One Piece, getting lunch, bathroom breaks, dinner, going to sleep, all with One Piece.
Just, oh my gosh. That's the ultimate staycation, isn't it?
Kind of, and it can only be done if you're in high school and you don't have a summer job.
I actually started watching Gintama.
Also another enormously large list of episodes.
Yeah, I don't recall what they're currently at, but I feel really bad for starting it. But I started watching a few episodes when Tiffany would have them on, and they are like, there are some really, really good episodes. So like as in any fashion of things I do, I started out with episode one against Scott's recommendation, I believe.
I didn't say anything against it. I just thought I'd say that the only episode I could think of that I thought was just absolutely hilarious was down the line a bit, and you didn't have to wait 80 or so episodes to get to it if you wanted to see it now.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. No, I don't. I think it's a funny show for every episode I've seen. I was like, are you sure you want to commit to that? And less of like, that's a bad idea.
I was about to say, we're too old and too busy for you to commit to that, Neil. Don't do it. It's all about the 24 episode animes.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing with it. I really should stop watching now, but...
You should, unless you're planning on also trying to get into an MMO, because that's all you're putting yourself through. I'm watching One Piece now just because I've dedicated more life to it than I'd like to admit.
I was trying to explain to Neil my reason for watching Dragon Ball Super is kind of like getting hooked on cigarettes as a kid. Now you're just addicted, and you got to watch that next episode, whether you know it's good for you or not.
Pretty much. It's kind of why I keep watching the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah.
It's too late. I've already dedicated too much time to turn back now. Neil, don't make the mistakes we've made.
I don't know. Gintama seems like it might be the type of show that if you just watch a few episodes here and there from each season, it would still be good. Cause like I know there are serious story arcs in it, but every episode I've really enjoyed so far have been like what you would consider filler, where like it's an episode about nothing substantial, just random stupid crazy events happen, and by the end of the episode everything's back to normal, or they've gone to a state that they're not even going to acknowledge all the changes by the end of the episode in the next one.
Well, I used to think shows like that existed, And then I watched Steven Universe, and then I realized nothing is filler. Everything's important. It's so good.
Maybe one day. Do you have any more animes or shows to talk about before you talk about games?
Also got caught up on Rick and Morty and started Lizzie on that journey.
That's an Adult Swim show, right?
Correct.
Yes.
And it's wonderful. Season 3's so far, they started off the season with like, this is going to be the darkest timeline, Morty. And so far, it's pretty darn dark.
Yeah, it's got a... What is it? Was it the Rickshank Redemption first episode? The next one was a Mad Max-esque universe. And then the most recent one was Pickle Rick, which, oh my God.
Pickle Rick's a badass.
Yeah, but wow, what an episode. Sierra and I were watching it, and she was like, I don't remember them being this gory. And I was like, I mean, they are to an extent, but this is very, very gory. Oh, man.
I always got the impression this was a comedy cartoon.
It is, but they don't pull punches on any single thing that they choose to do.
Correct. So it's funny and very, very, well, at least this season's just been the darkest timeline.
Yeah.
It's just been so fucking dark. And this show's gotten dark at times whenever you have to think about Morty looking at his own grave.
Is there a level of time travel involved in Rick and Morty?
Is there time travel, or is it just...
It's multiverse, I guess.
Just multiverse stuff.
Yeah, because I think it's been shown at least a couple of times that when they leave to go do something and they come back, normally the same period of time they've been gone has passed in Earth 31C or whatever it is. I can't remember which one the show normally focuses on. But
I think it's 137C.
Oh, yeah, 137C, it probably is. I'll look it up real quick.
I know it's got something to do with 37.
It's Earth C-137. There we go. It's one of the many universes that exists, but... Wait, no, that's not the right one either. They escape that one after they absolutely ruin it with the Love Potion episode.
Yep.
Well, shit, I don't know what it is now. It's one of the universes.
There's no way to quickly find it, it turns out.
Yeah, time travel's messy in that show.
Does the show take itself seriously?
Define take itself seriously.
Has incredibly serious undertones to some of the content and like storylines that they pursue, but at the same time, it will crack a joke, and it normally does crack a joke at the expense of literally anything. So, sort of. It's a 50-50.
Yeah.
Gosh, I'm surprised you just haven't seen it, Neil. That's definitely a show worth watching, for sure.
Indeed.
I'm not sure there's an episode that I've watched that I've not been, you know, hooked start to finish.
More than Steven Universe?
I won't say anything, because I know how important it is to Cookie that you watch it. Steven Universe has great music, I'll tell you that.
Steven Universe does have great music. I will say...
Rick and Morty is probably easier to catch up on.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like... They're both equally important. Rick and Morty, it'll get you a little bit quicker than Steven Universe will, just because Steven Universe, unfortunately, does have the drawback of being a Cartoon Network show for season one.
Yeah, it's a slow burn.
But then once you're in, you're in.
So, Cookie, what games have you been playing while you've been away?
I've been playing That's You! Exclamation point. Just because it's there. So it's not, is it made by the same people who make the, Jack Party Pack?
No, I don't think so, but it certainly has a very strong connection in terms of mechanics.
In terms of mechanics and in terms of the person that is your host, sounds exactly like Cookie Masterson from the You Don't Know Jack series.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This game brings up a couple of interesting things. One, the PS4 can be its own ad hoc network. And it's actually a pretty strong network besides the stupid long password that they give you to sign into the PS4. And what I mean by ad hoc network is when you boot up, that's you. It says, hey, you don't have Wi-Fi that everyone needs to connect to? Don't worry about that. Just turn the Wi-Fi on your PS4. It disconnects all internet connections from the PS4, so you can't access the wide web, but you can connect to the PS4 in its own personal network. Did you guys know that the PS4 could do that?
Actually, no, I had no idea.
That's surprising. I assumed it just like the Jackbox party packs went to the internet, the cloud, and everyone connected there. But you're telling me that you just do it off of the PlayStation's network?
Yep, either that or everyone's got to be on the same Wi-Fi network. And it also requires its own standalone app called That's You! Exclamation point.
So why even have a super long password when you could have cut it down to like 4 characters?
Because I don't think it was That's You that introduced the PS4's capability of doing its own Wi-Fi hotspot. They are just the only people who said, oh, it does this. Let's use that feature that Sony didn't even tell anybody about. Because I was kind of combing through like patches, and I have no idea when this got implemented or added. And the only thing that takes advantage of it is That's used for right now. So it's in their firmware. So their super long password, I think, is just because Sony wasn't thinking anyone's going to use this. Because, yes, I also agree it could have been a 4-digit password. Like, oh, yeah, get onto the PlayStation's network for you. The PlayStation's network. So That's You. You use a standalone app. You take a picture of yourself. And everybody that you're playing with is competing to get the most points. The only way to get points is by, so they'll ask you a question about one of the people in that's playing the game. And it'd be like, so how likely is Neil to go and kiss a random stranger? And then everyone like answers the question. And everyone who picked the same answer, they get points. So you've got to know the person that you're actually, you got to know the people that you're playing with, and like to a ridiculous degree of, I was playing it last night with my wife and one of her friends. Me and my wife were kind of dominating and picking questions at like the same time because we knew each other super well. So it was like, one of the questions was, which picture would best fit Cookie if he was trapped somewhere in the wild? And the picture was of like this dude just covered in mud, defeated. And me and Lizzie both picked that picture at like the same time. And then the other guy picked me in like camouflage, being all like super stealthy and prepared. I was like, yeah. So you got to know the person that you're playing with. So in that regards, I don't really consider it much of a party game for like mingling and getting to know each other. I consider it more of a, hey, we've lived together for years and this is my best friend from middle school. We've hung out every year since we've known each other type thing. So
do you think that that acts as kind of a deficiency then for the type of audience that you can play that game with?
Yes.
Like it definitely seems like a limiting factor if you have to have at least some like decent knowledge of the people you're playing with in order to fully enjoy or utilize the game and its mechanics, versus something that you can pop out at a party like the Jackbox, where you actually don't have to know anyone. You just have to follow the basic goals or directions of whatever the mini games are that you're playing. And it pretty much everybody has a fair shot, assuming they're not super talented at, say, drawing for some of the more artistic games that you do with your phone. Like, yeah. if this guy knew you better, he could have obviously maybe scored some more points.
Mm-hmm. So is there primarily only one game mode to that?
Yeah, and it's more like they have it in this travel montage. So basically it takes you to different locations and then just asks you a series of questions based off that location. So one location was like an amusement park on like on a pier. So it was asking like questions about what certain people would do at a fun park. And it's like, okay, this is cool. But yeah, only one game mode. Always has to do with the people that are actually competing in the game. So it's just like, oh yeah, as everyone's competing, it'll just ask questions about the person itself. I lost track of my what I was even going to mention there. But yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's you. Yep. That's you. That's...
That's me? No.
That's you.
That's you.
So I could see it being fun. So say you're in a... with a group of friends, but like it's three couples, basically. So then everyone's got like an equal chance with their significant other to like kind of get things done. But besides that, it's... I can only see this being working primarily with friends, super close family, and or your significant other. We mentioned the Rick and Morty, the episode that was Mad Max-like. I've also been playing this this game that's very Mad Max-like in its own right. It's called Crossout. It's kind of an MMO-ish vehicular homicide game, where you actually build the vehicles that you're riding in, so you can quite literally scrap your entire car and start with, like, front axle.
For the PS4?
Yes, sir. It's actually a lot of fun, and I think most of the fun of this game comes from the ridiculous creations that people make.
I'm looking at a car right now, as soon as you said ridiculous creations, that has six legs. More or less a spider vehicle minus the requisite two extra legs. And then there's like these triangle shaped tread tanks. And there's some weird stuff here, honestly. One of these looks kind of like a mech from Gundam.
Is there any reasoning you didn't call it like an insect car then instead of a spider car?
Oh, yeah. You know, that's actually a great point. I see the legs in the particular shape that they're in, and I think spider immediately. But in reality, that's exactly how an ant's legs would be placed.
It's fine. We all know that you're prejudiced towards insects now.
I mean, ants are less threatening than spiders, I guess.
Scott does make a good point. I just call them walking tanks.
Ooh, there's one that seems to have like jet engines pointed at the ground, so kind of like a hovercraft.
Yeah, I noticed that one too. There are some pretty interesting cars here. It goes above and beyond that of Mad Max, and I say that in a good way.
I agree. Oh, yeah.
So, like, one of the vehicles I got to try out was called the Rocket Something X Mach 2, and basically it was two wheels, all the jet engines you could think of placed in like a weird array, and a cockpit. So basically you kind of, the way the jet engines were placed and attached, they made the wings of the vehicle itself. So then you kind of just get out of your base area, and you hit the button to turn the engines on. And it just shoots off to the edge of the map and destroys itself.
So how does this game control overall?
Actually pretty good. It's kind of like, it's basically Twisted Metal, but with a lot more customization.
That's awesome.
Like, I've played one raid so far, and a bunch of like team death matches, and they've got daily missions, weeklies, and monthlies. Yeah. Just like everything else.
So how are you oriented into teams? Is it 1v or is it a free-for-all, or how does that work?
So I've only played some team modes. Unfortunately, I'm only level 4, so I don't have access to everything. Like, I can't even try out some of the vehicles yet, like the spider tanks, the walking tanks. I can't try those out because I don't have the clearance for that leg. And so I've played a couple of team deathmatch modes, and the raid was like, the one that I played was you were protecting this really, really slow vehicle. So it was just like, okay, people are trying to destroy this vehicle. So it was just an escort mission. It lasted about 30 minutes. It was kind of difficult, actually. But the slogan for Crossout, craft, ride, destroy, it's totally true. Like, they're just like, hey, here's your first car. It's basically a pickup truck with two machine guns on it. And you do your first mission, you unlock another machine gun. They're like, put the third machine gun on it. That's how you play Crossout. This is how you build a vehicle. All right, have fun. Go.
Man, I'm just loving like seeing all these different vehicle designs and thinking about what stupid things you could do with them. There's like some sort of stretch vehicle on here that's got 14 wheels, 7 axles, 14 wheels. It's a stretch vehicle.
The one that's got stupidity with the two machine guns on the front.
Yeah,
that's pretty much. That's, you can literally ride around and drive things like this. So when you're actually in combat, when people shoot you, they're actually shooting the parts of your vehicle off.
Oh.
So like I ended one round, I had my back left tire left, and I can only kind of pseudo scoot in like a semicircle basically.
Right. Because I only had one tire. So it does really affect your motion then too.
Mm-hmm.
And oh then,
so like you can purposely target people's guns to destroy the guns off their vehicle, so now they're no longer a threat, and then just slowly pick them apart.
What are your feelings on ramming vehicles? Because that seems to be very popular. If there's not guns, then it seems like a lot are built for just ramming into things.
My pickup truck has two Buster Swords on the front.
Buster Swords. Like we're talking Buster Swords at i.e. Cloud Strife from Final Fantasy VII?
Correct.
Excellent.
They call them knives, but they look exactly like his Buster Sword. So, yes, ramming is just fine.
I want to note that this is also available on Steam, and it is free to play on Steam as well. Did you guys ever watch Robot Wars?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
This is kind of like if someone initially started making a game to more or less like mimic Robot Wars, but then realized partway through that it would be so much better if they just based it on cars.
Yeah, I think so.
That makes sense at this point, actually. Yeah.
Mixed reviews overall. It was released on July 26th, 2017. But everything we've talked about so far, it's free to play. So I'm curious, how soon or how far did you get into it before you started to see the limitations of like pay to win or whatever, like microtransactions?
I haven't seen any like pay to win-ishness yet. So I do know that they do have microtransactions which grant you in-game currency, but that in-game currency also comes with, so it's really easy to get the in-game currency outside the microtransactions. There's their own marketplace, so you can quite literally, like, every match that you do, even if you lose, you get parts and you get scrap metal. And at one point I had like 12 doors. I'm like, I don't need 12 doors, so I quite literally broke down 6 of them, sold 6 of them, and that just netted me a nice little bit of coin, which is the real world money that people can buy. So far, it's, wow, that is quite literally a hut on top of, like, a tree-like truck thing. Anyway, so far, I haven't really seen any limitations of, like, anyone seeming to be like, oh, yeah, they've got the most powerful stuff, so they're just outgunning me every time I come around them. I feel as if it's too balanced to be pay to win right now.
At least on the PS4 platform.
Correct.
Because it seems like most of the negative reviews on Steam are based around basically there being an imbalance once you get far enough into the game.
And I can see that. I can see where that might come to play. I haven't quite gotten there, unlike with, like, say you play World of Tanks. That game's pay to win. Doesn't matter if you're brand new at the game or, like, super far into the game. You can clearly see like the difference between the vehicles themselves and how much more powerful someone else's light tank is versus yours. Where this, so far at least from what I've played, it's just been like, oh yeah, no, I got outgunned there. Or, hey, yeah, we're running circles around this fool. It's a lot more stick with your team. Don't go one versus many in this game, because they can just surround you, pop off all your tires and your gun, and then just leave you for dead.
That actually seems kind of cool. Like, I, as bad of a situation as that is, it's kind of like the same way I've heard about people tying up prisoners in, not Arma 3, but the H1Z1 or DayZ or whatever, and then force feeding them bleach to kill them.
Basically.
Like, in and of itself, it seems like a shitty situation to be in. But the fact that you can get yourself in that shit situation to begin with, shit-tuation, if you will, is cool. It's interesting.
Why waste bullets when there's a whole tub of bleach nearby?
Yeah, what else are you going to use that bleach for?
Based off these reviews, I'm just going to have to keep playing and get far enough in to where I can clearly see the benefits of people paying to win. Or this could be just someone being angry that they got outgunned and they're like, oh, there's a real world thing and you can, it's got pay to win on it. Yep, we're just going to negative review it for that.
I think there's also the possibility that, because I'm assuming it's not crossplay from PS4 and Steam. And if that's the case, I think there is a genuine possibility that you might not have the same experience on PS4.
And that could be it.
What other games have you been playing?
Nothing much. I kind of recently ran out of space on my computer. So actually, it turns out my Steam library was just on my primary. Steam library was on my C drive. So I just moved it to my E drive, which was just an empty drive. I was like, okay. And I moved it incorrectly, so I had to delete Steam and re-download Steam and start re-downloading all the games.
Were all of your saves backed up to the cloud?
I think so. I haven't run anything, really, except for The Long Dark. And as Scott so clearly pointed out, I don't care if I lost that game. I don't care.
Did you play any of the story?
I did. And I was utterly frustrated throughout the entire tutorial story part.
That's really reassuring to know, since I know you're like a pretty new player to the game. Because a lot of people argue that it's like an absolute necessity for people who are new to the game. And yet,
it's an absolute necessity for people who are brand new to the game. For I was like, the first night when you're like, okay, I need to do this. And I was like, sweet, I'm going to get some stuff prepared and I'm going to do some things first before I complete this objective to better prepare myself. And then I do it and I'm thinking, okay, I should probably have a little bit of time to, like, you know, purify this water that I've got now. And then I go to sleep and I'm like, fuck, okay. And now my fire's out. Cool. I'm going to start collecting branches again, get this fire started, going to start cooking some food. And all right, I did the thing. Crap. Now my fire is out again. Now there are barely any resources on this fucking little plateau that I'm on. Yeah, it pissed me off because I was prepping.
Right, which is the behavior that literally anybody who's played the game for any period of time gets first. Like, it's the first habit is prep and store anywhere that you're near, like, some sort of shelter.
Correct, because you never know what's going to happen. So when I heard your, like, complaints about the game, because I listened to the episodes that I was not actually a part of, I totally agree. I'm just like, this is bad, and I was not feeling it at all. And that stupid wolf, when you first run into the wolves, the one that's the, like, oh, avoid that wolf in the deer carcass. And I was like, okay, right, I'm avoiding that wolf. And then I start walking, and then it's like, oh yeah, search this car for whatever. And I got in the car, but I had done a lot of prepping, so it was getting dark and my torch was going out. So I got in the car and pop, here comes this little wolf. And I'm like, okay. So I wait for it to pass. I get out of the car and it immediately turns around.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like, and it's not even that the wolf immediately turned around because you make any sound or movement, right? You just exit the car and it's like, oh, I detect a player on the map again, like within my death radius.
Quite literally just starts heading towards me. So I get to the next car, get in, wait for it to pass by in front of me. It gets out of sight. I get out of the car and pop, there it is. 20 yards away from me, growling at me. And I'm like, fuck me. So I get back in the car. And at this point, my torch has gone out and it's completely dark outside. And I just go to the long dark. I freeze to death. That was my way of saying I froze to death.
Yeah. Yep. So sounds like you had a pretty similar experience.
Yep. So I called it good. I was like, yep, I really hope that Scott's going to enjoy the story mode, because I'm never going to touch that again. I will just stick with this sandbox mode.
I'm only playing sandbox from here on out. I watched some more play of the second episode, and it was just more like inane fetch questing. I'm like, I'm not playing this shitty game to fetch you materials all the time. I'm fetching materials for me. That's when it's fun. When I choose to go get the things that I want or need.
Exactly. I will say it did teach me what those rose clips were for. Rose tips.
Rose hips?
Yeah, rose hips. So I didn't realize that it could cure as much as it does cure. And, you know, story mode, he's much better at starting a fire.
Yeah, I think he definitely has a... he has some sort of bonus to his fire starting versus the sandbox, because he's better at mending too.
Maybe yeah. It's the it's because of the fire he started earlier in life. That was his relationship with his wife.
Ex-wife now.
Yep, because that was really poor writing. I'm not one to nitpick writing, because, you know, I watch trash anime. So,
but
poor
you,
writing
and,
is not
and
a
you
thing.
Also watch Game of Thrones.
That's not poor writing.
You know, I would beg to differ at times.
At times, but you know, as an overall arch, I'm gonna call it not poor writing. I'd much rather sit through a Game of Thrones script than read the first three chapters of Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
I am Tyrion Lannister, a brilliant genius strategist that has actually done quite a bit in the, up to this point in season 7. Yeah, I couldn't realize that Castle Rock has absolutely no strategic value for the Lannisters.
Well, you know, he was away for like what could either have been 7 years or 2 months or 3 weeks, depending on which character you're following.
Basically 1 year and jetpacks. I mean, he probably jetpacked over and looked at everything to see the land. It's like, oh, I'm getting off my soapbox.
Either way, yeah, the Long Dark, it exists, and that story mode is no. And I also agree with Scott's last week's thing. I believe you said that you'd much rather pay a slightly lesser price for the sandbox and episode 1 than paying the full price of whatever the game is now for everything.
Yeah.
Is that what you said?
Yeah. You're right. I wanted to essentially parse it where I bought episode 1, and with episode 1 came the bare bones of the game for the sandbox mode. And then when I realized how bad episode 1 was, I could avoid buying episodes 2 through 5.
Yeah.
And then when they make a new season, if they do that, which I don't know if they'll be successful enough to do so, I can also avoid getting that and still enjoy my sandbox mode. End of the day, I think you and I agree on the fact that the sandbox is a really great and fun game.
Yes.
And that's probably what it should have just stayed.
I just want the sandbox with multiplayer, though.
That would be really cool with multiplayer. It'll never happen.
No Man's Sky.
That's an impossibility, but yeah, it's a good game otherwise.
I want you to hold on to the idea of impossibilities and multiplayer for just a little longer.
Wait, are we going to talk about No Man's Sky?
Maybe.
Okay.
So, I hear you guys have really low E's. E is low. League of Legends.
Yeah, I'm sure my ELO is pretty rough. But
I can't imagine mine's all that great. I have to get drug into greatness, and so when I don't have my handicaps around, I normally don't perform as well.
But yes, we have been playing quite a bit of League now, in particular because of the special game mode that we mentioned last week. Earth has returned in the form of all randomer for ARURF.
It was supposed to be out on the 11th, you said, but I think we started on the 10th.
Yeah, it was a day early, and it was nice. It was a pleasant surprise that they released the patch early.
Yeah. So, Neil, what champions have absolutely destroy, what champions absolutely destroy any hope of winning a game in all random Earth?
I think I'm trying to think of like the absolute most OP, because I've seen, I think there's a counter to any champion.
I think you're right. Yeah.
But those that I know are going to be an issue are usually Ashe, Blitz, Fiddle, and take Fiddle off that list, but Ashe, Blitz, Warwick, Fizz, and I'm forgetting someone, I think.
Vlad was pretty tough when we fought against him.
I also think Sion is ridiculous.
Mundo.
Oh, Mundo, actually, more so. Mundo is unkillable.
Mundo's amazing. And Nasus, at least if your team can hold out to like mid to late game, Nasus can eat just about anybody.
It depends like what route you take Nasus, because if you go for AP Nasus, he has the strongest early game with his Spirit Fire, but he falls off a little more by the end of the game. But if you go with Bruiser Nasus and get the Siphoning Strike up, your early game is super weak compared to like most of the champions out there, because people basically have infinite poke at that point, and your Spirit Fire is only eh.
Yeah, your Spirit Fire is really not even good enough at creating a perimeter for you to be safe within. Like, it's just enough to clip a little damage onto somebody who's going to attack you.
Oh, but man, if you start off with Magic Pen or whatever the hybrid is called now, and AP runes, and just build straight into Rabadon's or whatever the needlessly large rod build path that gets you the item that gives you more burst. I can't think of what the name is, but it's like the purple rod.
It is. The purple rod is called the needless. Or are you talking about the
final version of... So it's one of the three or two needlessly large rod build paths. And this one, like after a certain amount of time, it's passive, basically causes additional damage to stack on top of when you damage someone with an ability. And then it also jumps to any nearby champions. If you rush into something like that, even early on in laning, like that level one to level two Spirit Fire boost is just excessive. And the fact that you can like lay it down every 2 seconds or so, it basically makes playing someone like someone with slightly shorter range on your poke, it's a direct counter. He can be broken as fuck too early game. But man, Blitzcrank is godly in that mode.
Yeah, he is. His passive is godly. Like, the rest of his kit is wonderful as is, because he can always speed around the map, and he has that hook on cooldown so quickly. But his passive is amazing in that. He just keeps getting that extra armor. I don't know. I also thought at times, if you're able to build the attack speed and AP, like Gwinsu's Rageblade, and I think Stinger... Nasher's Tooth is the yellow sword, I believe. But Kale was working out really well, because you can actually have Kale's you can make Kale a completely ranged character, because the cooldown for her E, which gives her the ranged area of attack, or area of effect attack, the cooldown finishes before the actual buff is gone. And so long as you're mashing E, you're good on that. And then you can self-heal and increase your speed with W pretty quickly. All of her stuff is on a pretty short cooldown that way. You got invincibility like every 25 seconds or something, which is really nice too. Every team fight you can be invincible for, which is good.
Basically, any champion is more or less has like some broken state that they can achieve depending on the enemy team comp. Like, Shaco is ridiculous if the player is competent with him, because he, once he gets to level 6, he can bring up clones like every, it seems like 10 seconds. It's just like you never know which one, like which Shaco you're actually attacking.
Right.
I feel as if that was a dig at my Shaco.
Well, it would be a dig at most people's shakos because I don't know how to play that way either. And then he also has his disappearance up in like 2 seconds or something like that. It's just, it's
which is super
ridiculous.
Convenient unless someone's nearby you. Then it's less convenient. Right. Stupid, giant purple death beam.
Hell, like even Teemo has a degree of viability as long as you slip push with him.
The blinding dart.
Yeah, the blinding dart, and then his mushrooms are on that ridiculous cooldown too. So you basically just need to play Minefield, except in like you're forcing the other player to play Minefield, I guess you could say. You just have to shroom up one of your lanes, either top or bottom, and basically try and kill someone purely from shrooms if someone ends up ganking you.
Right.
Fuck it. Yeah, it's solid. I don't know how much more we can talk about it, but we should definitely play some later.
We should play some more, yeah. Okay.
I'm fine with that.
It's time to open the hot pot. It's
wait,
reached
before we open the hot pot.
Okay.
One last thing about League of Legends.
Close.
Okay, perfect. One last thing about League of Legends. After playing some rounds with you guys of this ARV, I decided to play a game with one of my old friends. And he's not playing this mode. He's playing just normal League. Yeah. No, that's League is still boring for me.
And by the way, since you phonetically said it, whenever I read this ARURF, the sound that comes to my mind is the Fizz skin where he uses ERF as his ultimate.
ERF, ERF.
That ERF sound when ERF comes up and consumes whatever it is during that ult.
Yeah.
Like that, oh, it's fucking perfect. ERF.
Okay, I'll call it ERF from now on. But
see,
yeah, either way,
I almost thought of it as the Tim Allen
ERF.
You know that sound bite, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man.
We've all seen Home Improvement, I think, right?
I mean, yeah. I haven't seen Home Improvement. I've seen the Doom mod where everything is Tim Allen's face and making that noise.
What?
What, you haven't heard this? I'll have to show you sometime. To anybody who's interested, there's a mod of Doom in which every single texture is replaced with Tim Allen from Home Improvement, and every sound is a clip of him going at different like pitches and speeds.
And you're not joking either. It's absolutely every texture. So all of the environments are replaced with a portrait of Tim Allen. Every enemy. It's all Tim Allen.
Yeah, and all your bullets are Tim Allen going, arr, arr, arr.
And because of the nature of Doom, when you use a bullet, it's like, The animation for Doom when you shoot something wasn't actually a projectile or like some polygonal thing going into the three-dimensional realm. It was just a GIF or an animation plane. So all that happens because it's not like it's not an adjusted Tim Allen shot. It's just a portrait of Tim Allen shows up right by your Tim Allen gun. So if I remember right, it's like your gun is Tim Allen that shows up like at the bottom of your screen, and then the bullet shows up right inside of Tim Allen's forehead, which is also the same Tim Allen.
Yes.
This is amazing.
it's fantastic.
Okay. I'm tilting the lid. Are we good? The steam's coming out.
You can go ahead.
I just want to point out one other thing real quick while we're
on
the subject.
Okay, let's close again.
There's a Final Fantasy X mod out that came out sometime after it was released on PC where they replaced every sound effect. Maybe it's just the soundtrack. I can't. No. It's the soundtrack, and I think it's also all of the dialogue with Tidus's or Tidus, depending on how you pronounce it. Tidus's laugh track. It's not equal to the Tim Allen Doom mod, but it's pretty damn close.
Yeah, that's pretty great too, though. I'm very, very slowly lifting the lid. Are we good here? Are we ready for the hot pot?
Wait, before you lift that lid.
Closing the lid.
Yeah, before you lift that lid, I will have to say I went to a ramen shop in Benson, and it was awesome.
Oh, is it
Isa something?
No, we went to the other one. Yeah, we went to Ica.
Ica, that's what it is. Sorry, I have an Iza out here that's different. Got it mixed up.
So yeah, I went to Ica and it was quite delicious, but we want to go to the other one now.
Ugly Duck? Benson. That's in Benson.
Yeah, there's another one in Benson that I was actually told to go to. We just missed that one.
Are you sure it's not the one that they eventually made Ica?
No, because it's still in its original location, like right before you get to downtown Benson. It's I forget what it's called. Doesn't matter. I was just saying, before you left that hot pot, I wanted to tell you a little bit about ramen. It was delicious ramen. All right, go ahead.
We are hot the fancy ramen podcast, after all. Hot pot. All right, guys. With recent news that Bethesda will be releasing more Pip-Boys with the release of Fallout 4's Game of the Year edition, one might ask the question, will Bethesda ultimately have more versions of Fallout 4 or Skyrim?
Since you're putting ultimately, Bethesda hasn't fully used this Fallout 4 game to the same degree that they have Skyrim.
Exactly.
And I don't think they can if they remaster or remake Skyrim any further, what else can they bring to it? Oh, they could bring VR to it.
Which they are.
Yeah, I was about to say that's coming.
And you could argue that there are two versions of Skyrim VR coming out. one for the PSVR, and there's probably going to be something that eventually comes out on Steam for Skyrim VR.
But Fallout 4 also is really it's a graphically well-developed game. Like, I don't think they can do an HD or ultra remake of Fallout 4 right now. And in the future, I don't think that they'll bother to. So,
Skyrim was released in 2011, and Fallout 4 was released in 2015. Yeah, 2015.
Yes, 2015.
So the reason I ask this is because who's to say that in 2020 we don't end up having more versions of Fallout 4?
Because they're going to keep making versions of Skyrim, obviously.
Yeah, they're never going to stop with Skyrim. Fallout 4 will never get its chance, and Elder Scrolls 6 will never have a chance either. It'll be drowned by copies of Skyrim.
Bethesda will no longer be making games. They'll just be making Skyrim.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it'll be Elder Skyrim 6, the Skyrimming. Like, I don't understand how they keep making and selling this game over and over and over again. But I'm willing to bet that a lot of this pandemonium about remarketing Skyrim over and over is not necessarily going to transfer to Fallout 4 and necessarily other games in the future of theirs as well. Like,
Skyrim was just at that pivotal moment of, it actually looks pretty, but not pretty enough, so people made HD mods, and then they figured they can make money off those HD mods by just stealing them, putting the skin on, and then releasing it on the next console.
Yeah, I'm hoping that this is mostly an isolated event, that Skyrim may be the most remade game that Bethesda will have, at least for quite a while.
I could see Skyrim being the most remade game.
Yeah, in general, I guess.
It's getting up there with the likes of like Street Fighter.
It's quite possible.
Oh man, think of Skyrim Turbo Edition. That'd be crazy.
But let's not encourage them any further. No Man's Sky release was met with heavy criticism over many of the missing features that were promised prior to release. Perhaps the most notable case was the one over multiplayer, or the lack thereof. In multiple interviews, director Sean Murray stated various features that relied on the interaction from multiple players. But with No Man's Sky's 1.3 update, named Atlas Rises, Hello Games is implementing its first form of player-to-player interaction. Now, before anyone's hopes get up, have you guys seen what this interaction is?
No, yes. I just remember when I first read about this that I saw the word with limitations or with certain restrictions. And I was like, oh, okay, I don't care then.
Oh, and let me, you're going to get a kick out of these limitations. Basically, if we are on a world together and I happen to go to the point where you're at, you are now going to be represented as a strange bouncing color globe or globe of light.
You're not bouncing, you're floating.
Floating, bouncing, either
don't,
or.
Don't let him tell you that there's more going on than there actually is.
I mean, you're going to be jumping.
No Man's Sky needs some more, no more of that.
Like, what do you do in these types of games, in first-person shooter explorer games? You jump. We've all played Minecraft, so you're going to be a bouncing orb, except you're not touching the ground. So that's as far as they've gotten. That's all you can do at this point. And there is proximity-based
voice chat.
I'll
be honest with you. It excited me enough for me to re-download it on my PS4.
Are you excited to talk to some orbs?
No. I'm excited to actually see what this game looks like now, though. You know, almost a year later.
Yeah, I think we're literally on the anniversary now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, because it was August release last year, if you guys recall. Have we been doing this for almost a year?
No, we started in January, if I'm not mistaken.
January?
Or December?
Yeah, no, it might have been. All I know is I was a part of the team in March, so.
Okay, yeah. Either way.
We actually had so many episodes without you. We started off in the negatives.
This is not going to make No Man's Sky any better. And if you do watch the video, Neil, you might find some solace in the fact that I did see some of those orbs bouncing. Because, yes, it does seem that the best way to communicate in a game with no other communication is to jump up and down.
I mean, at least they can talk to each other over chat, assuming you use a microphone.
Still, is that really that much of interaction, though?
Oh, no, absolutely not.
It's more than we had, guys. It's more than we had. I just want to explore the galaxy with my brother.
Cookie's okay? Got Stockholm Syndrome.
I do.
Overwatch is getting a new mode. Anybody else hear about that? I don't know. Do you guys play Overwatch that much?
You guys will have to take the lead because I have never played Overwatch.
Neil just watches people playing Overwatch.
Oh, Neil does like to watch. You're a passive gamer sometimes, Neil.
Sometimes?
You're a passive gamer a lot of the times, Neil.
Is this just because I don't go as YOLO as you guys?
I don't mean to go YOLO. A lot of the times I'm accidentally in over my head and YOLO's the only way out.
Correct.
Neil got to witness me pretty much inciting the entire northwestern portion of Europe in Europa uniting in a coalition against me. I find myself in a lot of games. How did I get here? Oh, everyone or everything is very angry. Oh. I need to get out of here.
What mistakes were made?
Yeah. It's always analysis after the damage has been done, unfortunately, and that's why I'm so prone to YOLO. Yeah, for Overwatch, we're getting a deathmatch mode. And as I had said to Cookie a little bit earlier, I think it's mostly going to be familiar to what we have experienced with all the other deathmatch and free-for-all modes in classic FPS games like Halo and Call of Duty. The only difference is that obviously the maps will be modified a bit because Overwatch maps are definitely meant for in their original capture. Designs. Yeah, to be a capture and a teamwork base. And with this new type of mode, they definitely will have to modify the maps in order to make movement and access to certain areas and I guess places combat can be happening. There needs to be more fairness. If you just have an open sky for Pharah and a flat land below her, like some areas in the game have for the team play, if you're playing someone who's pretty much grounded and has no way to reach that Pharah, you're doomed in this deathmatch. So I think they're going to edit and adjust those maps to have a little bit fairer boundaries where nobody or no enemy is inaccessible to others.
Nope, it's going to be all Pharahs and McCrees.
Pharah, McCree, and we're going to have Maze just blocking hallways with ice walls. That's how I'm going to play it.
You play on PC, Scott?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, I'll have to buy this game on PC so we can play together.
Oh, I'd play it with you on PC anytime you want. Overwatch and League, I've finally kind of gotten back into playing a little bit more. I love playing with other people on PC. It's probably one of the reasons I don't pay for PlayStation Plus is because I get all my multiplayer fun out of the PC. The quick details on deathmatch is there will be both the free-for-all of eight players in a regular deathmatch mode. I think you need 20 kills. That is correct. That's what Jeff Kaplan suggested in his video, and that the maps have been modified for the team deathmatch. I can't remember hearing if the maps had been modified for that as well. But that's 6v6, so it's the normal team comps, or the normal, I guess, team numbers. And then you only need 30 kills. But he did say that they've modified some like skills or abilities for the heroes that could make the game a little more interesting. The most interesting, of course, he brought up was that Mercy Rezzes will actually remove the kill score for the enemy team. So if I'm a Mercy on my team with five other players and I'm the last one standing and I'm able to rez my units, I can essentially wipe five kills off the board for the opposing team, which is like amazing. That could be really, really cool mechanic. And I can imagine some clutch scenarios in which you erase the numbers just in time for your team to tip the scales and win a game.
I can dig it. I'm excited.
I'm excited too. I think this will be a game mode that a lot of people will enjoy.
Do they have a time frame at which they'll release it?
It should be coming up pretty soon. Whenever they bring up, well, the new map that they're bringing in, Chateau Guillard, which is Widowmaker's base of operations, is almost done, I believe. I think that's in PTR right now. So nice. Once that map comes out, then so should the deathmatch mode. They should come out at the same time. And so it should be pretty short. Like, I'm going to imagine within the next couple of weeks, it's going to be good to go.
I almost asked, what's the game of the year edition get me for Overwatch?
Don't do it. It's just skins, I assume.
It's skins for StarCraft, Diablo 3, World of Warcraft, Heroes of the Storm.
Dumb.
And
yeah,
I
that's
guess,
real dumb.
I guess some skins for Overwatch and 10 loot boxes, so no. That's
yeah,
not worth
and
it.
especially you know how quickly you'll get those first 10 loot boxes anyway for your first 10 levels.
Oh yeah. Should I buy this on the 60 on the buy for Windows?
You're playing on your rig, right? You're not playing on
Yes.
What's the other option to buy besides the four Windows?
It says gift, PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. I don't know why I'm questioning this.
Yeah, I don't know why you asked either. I mean, gift, you'd be able to select... no, gift would still be the digital version for the computer. That's right. Yeah, Cookie, buy the one that you asked. The four Windows version.
But if it's four Windows, does that mean you have to use that shitty Xbox app to play it?
No, you still use the Blizzard... client.
It's a Blizzard client.
Okay.
Oh, speaking of, do I have the Blizzard client on this thing? Because if so, I don't remember my login information for Blizzard.
That's okay. I never did either.
Guess I'll just log in through Facebook. Because that's always safe. What's up with this podcast and me buying things on it?
You remember that one time almost bought a bunch of stuff because your phone thought you were saying something?
You remember that one time that you got a game purchased for you because you asked about it on the podcast?
Oh my God, it was so great.
You remember that one time you accidentally bought 10,000 pounds worth of lube?
I remember that time.
Do you remember that time I accidentally bought a Nintendo Switch because someone told me I could milk a cow?
Are we moving on from Overwatch?
Is there anything to move on to, Neil?
Yes, there is.
Haven't we cleaned out our hot pot?
The hot pot might be finished, but there is one more section to go over. If you have comments, questions, or corrections, you can write in to podcast@fancyramen.com. You can also leave comments on our YouTube. And if you're not aware, these are up on YouTube, though there's no video at this point to watch along with comments like this. Daniel writes, I want a re-release of the original .hack. I never shelled out the $50 for the fourth title, but maybe I should because now it goes for $130 via eBay. Also, the PS3 Shadow of the Colossus is a remaster. The one to come is a remake. And there's actually one more comment I'm going to try and find here real quick. I believe I forgot to read these off last week.
You did.
Thanks for spoiling The Sixth Sense. Oh yeah, thanks for the Darth Vader spoiler warning. And more burrito reviews, please.
We review burritos?
I review burritos.
It was on the episode you didn't listen to, Cookie.
Oh, it was that one. The first episode I was not a part of.
So thank you very much for the correction there. That is absolutely correct. Shadow of the Colossus for the PS3 was a remaster, and the one coming out is a remake.
Oh, that's true, which means hopefully better mechanics. Or
better just, control?
Improved controls, yeah.
And again, if you want to reach us, you can email us at podcast@fancyramen.com. And if you've been enjoying the show, leave a review with us on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, or your favorite podcasting service. But more importantly, tell a friend and help us grow our audience. I think that about does it for episode 28 of the Fancy Ramen Podcast. Do you guys have any last thoughts before we go?
Not really.
Make love, play video games. Anime's cool. Movies. Oh, well, I'm Cookie.
I'm Scott.
Bye, everybody.
And that was Neil.